This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by Go Engineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit theuavdigest.com/goengineer. And by UAV Propulsion Tech, a provider of propulsion, servo, autopilots, and rescue and recovery parachute solutions for the unmanned aerial vehicle market. For more information, check out www.uavpropulsiontech.com. This is episode 153 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And my co-host is going to be a bit whiny and complainy tonight. It's a little hot and steamy at his house.
I'm melting. Yeah, it is hot here. But we'll get through it, David.
That's right, because I have air conditioning. I don't have to worry about it. So we got a big show for us tonight, so I guess I should go over a little bit what we're going to talk about. So you want to track your drone? So does Flight Radar. Kansas gets a drone czar. Brexit causes drone inspections of the channel. Is Skynet coming? And artificial intelligence. More geofencing from DJI. And of course, listener mail and video of the week. Our first story comes from multiple places. A shout out to our Slack team. The first story was from Motherboard. The site that lets you track planes in real time wants to track drones too. And that site they're referring to is Flight Radar 24, or Flight Radar, which most av geeks know, love, worship, and adore, I guess would be one of the, it's one of those technologies that everybody seems to want to play with.
It is very cool. They track aircraft in real time. They use a network of ADS-B receivers to do that. And in fact, you can participate in this process yourself. You can get a little simple computer, even a Raspberry Pi, hook an antenna up to it and collect data that's used by Flight Radar 24 and others. You could become part of the network in effect. But they are, well, they're getting together with SkySense. SkySense is Stockholm-based. They develop ADS-B solutions, hardware, actually, for small UAVs. And these guys, David, they're partnering in an interesting way.
Now, Flight Radar does track aircraft, and you know, that's very, very cool. Well, now we've got SkySense, which is developing these ADS-Bs that are small enough to use on micro UAVs. So you'll be able to track them like you track Air Force One or the local Air France flight from Philadelphia to Paris. And they're also making it so that the ADS-Bs will respond with the rest of the modern universe, which is civilian aircraft. The jetliners will be able to see the ADS-B drones and avoid them, or vice versa.
So this little bit of hardware, this board is called the BCON-1, the letter B, C-O-N-1. And SkySense calls this the world's lightest, most energy efficient, and smallest ADS-B out device for drones. It is very small, very light. It's not completely inexpensive, but they are small. Those are the two big things, I think. Well, there's how big and heavy is it? How much does it weigh? Because for a small drone, that's a big issue. How much power does it consume? Because if it's a lot, then that's a problem too. And how much does it cost? Well, these things are available, according to the SkySense website, in, well, three different flavors, ranging in price from $1,000 to $1,500. $1,000 gets you the bare board, which weighs just 1 ounce, which is pretty light. You can also spend more, get a plastic enclosure for it, or spend even more and get an aluminum enclosure for it. and SkySense. So all you really need to put one of these on your drone is you need to feed it power and you need to feed it a GPS signal. So with Flight Radar 24, obviously, as you mentioned, David, a very respected organization, teaming up and investing some of their money into SkySense, I think this has some good potential, but we'll have to watch because creating something new is always, you know, fraught with difficulties. But we'll certainly be watching this one.
Financial peril.
There you go.
But and let's face it, right now this is a new technology and bleeding edge. You're not going to throw it on your Phantom at $1,000 for the board, but for a lot of prosumers or pros.
Commercial uses.
Commercial yeah. uses, it's probably an investment worthwhile. You know, it's one more thing that you could say to the FAA, look at what I'm doing. I've got an ADS-B on mine, so I'm flying safe. So good for them. Good for Flight Radar to be proactive and get involved with it. They'll benefit in the long run because they just like us Av geeks just watching everything, you know, and should something happen, they'll be the ones the news go to. Well, what was the flight pattern?
Right.
So the next story is from Boeing, actually their media room. Boeing opens up a collaborative autonomous systems laboratory in Missouri. The Castle, yes, folks, Castle, C-A-S-L. Is a new laboratory to test hardware and software, much like our AI lab that we talked about at Langley.
What they want to do is do some research and make autonomous vehicles work together more effectively as a team. And the lab intends to work with different academic institutions, with research partners, government agencies, and so forth in this 8,100 square foot laboratory. This is part of Boeing's Research and Technology Center, BRT or BRNT, in Missouri. There are a number of other labs associated with that organization. I thought that it was interesting. The leader of BRNT, Nancy Pendleton, has a quote in this press release. She says, "This lab provides us an outstanding environment to experiment and innovate with a variety of autonomous vehicles and systems and sensors that drive them, from small unmanned aerial vehicles to unmanned undersea vehicles." So here we see Boeing now jumping into the fray, as are kind of a number of big aviation companies. We're seeing this more and more. So hopefully we'll see some really interesting things come out of this lab.
Yeah, and maybe we should try to reach out to Boeing and our nemesis and see if we can get somebody from there.
Our nemesis?
No, all right, let me backtrack. Boeing is just challenging when it comes to trying to get people on the air.
There we go.
But I'm always up for a challenge.
So they've got some interesting things going on in this lab. They have an 80,000 cubic foot indoor motion capture system. This lets them operate a number of UAVs simultaneously, along with unmanned ground vehicles in this environment. They can perform simulations and do other research in that space. So that's pretty exciting.
All right. Well, moving on to our next story. This is, I find this interesting. And this is from the Wichita Eagle, which is a really good newspaper that we're fond of on Airplane Geeks because it covers all of the news surrounding Wichita, which is a big hub for aviation. Most people probably don't realize it, but that's where Boeing 737 fuselages are hatched before they're moved out to Washington. But Kansas named an Air Force veteran as their first unmanned aircraft director. This is a state position, not a federal one, to deal with UAV issues in the state of Kansas.
And they chose Bob Brock for this position. Brock had a 22-year career in the Air Force using drones or in positions that use drones for intelligence and special operations. So he comes from this military drone kind of a background. And I think he's quoted in his article, as I recall, David, saying that, military is not the same as commercial and, well, in other non-military drone operations, but there are still lessons that can be learned and shared across them. So he's got some interesting duties, I think, lined up for him.
He does. First one, of course, no state job isn't involve economics, to help drone-related businesses. Safe operations of drones by individuals and companies through education, maintaining personal privacy, developing a plan with the Department of Commerce and the Department of Agriculture to bring jobs to Kansas. Precision agriculture, we keep talking about that. And integrating drones into state work, like inspecting bridges and that such. So a lot of hefty tasks there. I do like the integrating with Department of Commerce and Department of Agriculture, but I think he's probably missing one, like the Department of Transportation and the FAA. What do you think, Max?
Probably, but I think the really interesting part about that is that the state is, in this case, state of Kansas, doing more than just, not to minimize it, but doing more than just encouraging business, bringing jobs in, and so forth. They're actually looking to use these drones for state purposes, you know, like you said, David. So they've got more skin in the game, if you will, than just helping the industry develop in their state. They're also looking to use the technology for the state. So I think that that gives them maybe a little bit of extra motivation to be successful at this.
And I like the fact that they're not trying to legislate UAVs. They're trying to integrate UAVs. You know, maintaining personal privacy, I guess that's going to be all of it. But at least it's we're not trying to legislate where you can fly and what you can fly and what you're not allowed to look at. This is actually being proactive instead of reactive, I guess. But good for Kansas. We'll keep following up with that. Maybe that will be a model for a lot of other states.
Right, exactly.
Now, the next story I'm going to say, we've learned an important lesson on Airplane Geeks, and that is we're not experts on Brexit. We don't plan to be experts on Brexit, and we understand that there are two opposing viewpoints that are very...
Strongly held.
That being said, we have to do a Brexit story, and this is about the Eurotunnel, or what I grew up calling the Chunnel, and this was from the independent.co.uk. Drones deployed to keep immigrants and refugees out of the Channel Tunnel amid warnings of post-Brexit surge.
Hmm. Very interesting.
It really is. I wouldn't even have thought about this, that they're expecting a flee of people from Great Britain back into the EU and a refugee crisis of some sort where they would be using the Channel, and the Channel isn't designed to be walked through or driven through, especially with very, very fast trains. They're setting up a perimeter using drones to survey the area to prevent this from happening.
Right. The concern from Eurotunnel is that with Brexit and the sort of potential closing off, if you will, of Britain to those on the continent, that on the French side of the tunnel, they may see a lot of people suddenly try to get into Britain now before it becomes more difficult after Britain exits the EU. Now, that's how it's described in this article. And they're worried about these people. So there's an 18-mile secure zone that surrounds the tunnel entrance on the French side. And Eurotunnel has been demonstrating some small surveillance drones equipped with thermal imaging cameras. And they say that they can use this technology to help discover if there are people in these secure areas that shouldn't be.
In all fairness, this isn't trying to keep people out of Great Britain. This is trying to protect people from doing something that is perilous and dangerous. So it's interesting. It's an interesting use of drones. It's kind of like our southern border where they've been flying drones for surveillance, and infrared is the best way to do it. So let's hope it doesn't really come to anything like this. But it's an interesting story to come out of what is going to be a global story for a long time, which is Brexit. So let's move on to more important things, like the end of the world. Brexit is not the end of the world, but
although I guess AI, it depends on who you talk to. But go ahead, David. We're not going to get into it.
But AI might be. Is AI, and this was, I found this on my LinkedIn. Is AI the worst mistake in human history? It was from by John Battelle, founder of EIC and CEO of New Company. It's a very interesting story. One of the things that I was not allowed to bring up with Dr. Allen, or we talked about after I was done with the interview, was how many times she goes to lectures and they say, when is Skynet coming? When is the singularity coming? For those who don't know, the singularity is when machines are as intelligent as human beings. But this was a little different take that there's a fight over who's going to control the AI and not the AI taking over the world. What do you think, Max?
This topic I find very confusing. We see the AI, the artificial intelligence terminology used, but we're also seeing more of the tech firms using things like the machine learning and cognitive computing and things like that. And, lest you think that this doesn't really touch, your life yet, it really does in some amazing ways. This is what makes Siri work. This is what makes the Amazon Echo work and the things you can do with Google Photos. Maybe from a recent item in the in the press, it also is the technology that powers autonomous features on automobiles, and we've seen one of those issues come up lately. Google is even getting into the business of selling you cloud machine learning capability so that you can implement that in your own applications. So, this stuff is kind of pervasive. It raises a lot of questions on just many, many different levels. How do we relate this to unmanned aerial vehicles, David?
Well, it's like what I was talking with the AI autonomy lab. Eventually, we would like delivery drones. And delivery drones, we would like them to be autonomous. They need to go to point X to deliver my package and from where it's starting and for it to figure it out by itself and not have to program it. Or, more to the point, if something occurs in the middle of the journey, how to maneuver around to avoid said object or something. It's kind of like my favorite program on the world and Drone Mama's favorite, which is Waze. The best thing about Waze is in the middle of driving somewhere, it'll tell you there's an accident ahead and how to go around it. And that's kind of what we want drones to do and learn. So artificial intelligence is definitely part of the UAVs and it's going to be something we're going to be talking about. It's no more far removed than when we talk about 3D printing, right, Max?
But, it also raises questions like, imagine you've got a package delivery drone flying through the air and it self-detects some kind of failure. It could be a failure of the hardware, the software itself. It could be a bird that, took a dive at the drone and damaged it. And so now the drone has marginal stability. And what happens? How does the logic flow from that? If the option is, I can crash myself into this building over here, or I can crash myself into this street down there, what do I choose? What's the logic that's built into the artificial intelligence, the autonomy of the drone itself? There's lots of issues like that. They're not unique to unmanned aerial vehicles, but just maybe unmanned vehicles or robotics in general. So there's these big issues that I don't know if people are thinking about these things right now. I think people are mostly thinking about how do you make them fly? How do you make them carry the loads? How do you deliver them? And these other issues, could become very significant if they're left without any consideration. So I guess the way I look at this article, David, from John Battelle, is it kind of makes you think. And it's not written specifically about drones, but the implications are there. And for that reason, I think it's worthwhile to read this and kind of contemplate the implications.
And I agree. I mean, that's why I put it in our show notes, because I literally found this via, like I said, my LinkedIn. Artificial intelligence is going to be part of UAVs. It's going to be part of our cars. So it's something that we should talk about. It's not something we've touched on Airplane Geeks, but this is a perfect opportunity. It sort of flows with everything else. So autonomous vehicles are coming. We just hope that they don't take over. But we've talked about where drones should go and where shouldn't they go and who has the authority to say that. Well, DJI is making it real easy now for you not to fly your drone where you're not supposed to.
They have some updates. They're making improvements to the system. Part of its Go app and also the firmware, I think, for the Phantom and Inspire drones that deal with geofencing. And they made some progress and they have some changes to implement.
And the geofencing, if you don't know, it's basically a virtual wall that will say that if the drone comes up to, it won't cross it. And when we had the White House incident where the Secret Service agent was a little too tipsy and flew it onto the White House lawn, the DJI immediately did a firmware update to prevent that from happening again, but evidently that was done a little too hasty, and a lot of people pulled it back, including DJI. You can update your aircraft so it won't, but you can also disable it, sort of. You must have a verified account, a verified Go account, so DJI has a record saying that you turned this off. Now, if you're flying in an airfield or something where you need to turn it off, you have the opportunity to do it. There is one catch. There are still going to be places where you are not going to be able to fly your aircraft, like Washington, D.C., where there's a no-fly zone. No matter whether you opt out of the geofence or not, there are still going to be places of national security, etc., that you won't be able to fly. Okay. Well, I put this story in just because it drives my co-host nuts that they're from Connecticut. But our favorite college gun-toting, flame-throwing, drone-operating brat is at it again in this case. And his father, who defended him so vehemently, they're in trouble with the law again. These two just can't stay out of trouble. What is it with that Connecticut water?
I don't know, David. I have no excuse for or no defense for this guy or his parents. We know that they being the teenager and his father had been refusing to comply with a couple of subpoenas that had been issued by the U.S. Attorney's Office on behalf of the FAA, looking for some information about the YouTube videos that they posted. So they've been fighting that in court. The two claim that these subpoenas violate their constitutional right to be free from unreasonable searches and seizures, and they're also questioning the FAA's authority to regulate recreational drones. So all that is proceeding in court, but more recently, and I almost hate to bring this one up.
Well, here, I'll spare you from it. Evidently, in all of the unreasonable search and seizures, the teenager was discovered with some images that are greatly disturbing, and will be politically correct here, that violates a lot of federal laws. So he is now being brought up on charges on child pornography and communications. It's just these two have, I know we shouldn't really talk about them and give them credit, but it's amazing the dark, deep well that these two are falling down on a regular basis. So with that, I'll spare my co-host the rest of it, and let's talk about a video of the week. What do you think, Max?
Yes, from Joshua. He writes that he's been listening to us for over a year. He says he appreciates the education on the legal way to proceed with a UAV business. But he's a commercial fisherman in Alaska, and he started flying drones in 2013. And he's got a lot of feedback from other fishermen on the sort of the short clips that he had put on Instagram. So he's put together a video. It's a 4-minute video with narration that shows commercial salmon fishing in Alaska. And this is called salmon seining, I think, is the way you pronounce it. The seine is a type of fishing net.
It's definitely worth watching. Have you been to Alaska?
Yes, once on an Alaska cruise. In fact, just today I learned that Airways Magazine is got an Alaska cruise that's coming together for next year, 2017, May 26th through June 2nd. It's an AvGeek cruise, so you might want to pick up a copy of Airways Magazine. I'll give them the plug. This is the August 2016 issue that I've got. Alaska cruises are just spectacular, David.
I wasn't fortunate enough to be on a cruise. However, I had a very, very good friend, unfortunately he's passed, who lived in Ketchikan, Alaska.
Hmm.
And I was up there for the salmon runs. And it's beautiful country. B, if you're an av geek, it's an amazing place to be as far as float planes and stuff. But we really like to thank Joshua because I really enjoyed this. The other thing about it is I really like smoked salmon, so it was making me hungry. One thing I learned in Alaska, you know, people put tuna fish on crackers down here while they put salmon on crackers up there. So a little salmon salad with some mayonnaise. Oh, doesn't get any better than that.
Sounds wonderful.
Let's move on to something we haven't done in a little bit of a while, which was feedback. And the first one was from Charles. This X-shaped sensor will alert you to incoming drones so you can freak out. Just what everybody wants.
Right. This is from Ars Technica. On the drone tracker.
The drone tracker uses a combination of microphones, wireless sensors, video cameras, and infrared sensors to detect incoming drones. It's a drone alarm system.
We see a number of these things popping up. There's two things, David, that I think are little budding industries. One is just this one here. How do you detect drones? But we're also seeing a lot of designs, a lot of ways for taking them out once you find them. I'm not sure that particular sub-industry has a path outside of maybe law enforcement or that sort of thing. There's certainly a number of systems out there that are used to identify drones when they come into the area.
It helps the people with paranoia about drones. You know, it is an interesting dichotomy that for every drone, there's an equal and opposite anti-drone. It's still basically military technology, you know. You come up with a new technology, then you immediately have to come up with the technology to defeat it, which then causes you to have a technology to defeat the defeat, you know, and thus the spiral goes out of control. So, yeah.
Yes.
Next one is a bit of a shout out to our friend Jonathan Ruprecht. And I won't go much into this, but he put up on his website a part 107 frequently asked questions, which is really kind of nice. It's very simple, elegant, and the basic questions that a lot of us have are answered fairly concisely and in common plain English, which I happen to adore because I really am getting sick of being legalese on this show.
Jonathan does a really good job with this, though, I have to say.
And I'm sure we'll get Jonathan back on shortly. He's always willing to come on our show, and he is one of our legal experts when it comes to this. So I think we probably, as we get closer to August and the actual implementation of the 107, then we'll probably have Jonathan back on. The next one was sent to Max, and this is from Heath. Hey, guys, I thought you might find these heat maps interesting. They show the concentration of UAS owners according to the data the FAA released. Now, we had put some heat maps up, what, about 6 or 7 shows ago, right, Max?
Yes, and this, I think, is based off of the same data, but it's a little bit more in-depth analysis. But it features things like being able to zoom into the top, as I recall, 5 states as far as UAS registrations are concerned, and look within those states to see more specifically where within those states are the concentration of those that have registered with the FAA. So it's an interesting look at the data, and of course we'll have a link to that in the show notes.
So with that, I guess we should wrap this show up and call it quits, or at least till next week.
So we want to thank all of you for listening. We really, really appreciate it. We love the feedback we get from you, the participation. This has been episode 153 of the UAV Digest. You can find us at theuavdigest.com. Show notes are at theuavdigest.com/153. And of course, we're all over social media. David, where can folks find us?
Well, the number one place we'd love to find you is on our Slack team. And you can find out the details about that at theuavdigest.com/team. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/theuavdigest. And of course, our huge Twitter following at @UAVDigest. You can email us at feedback@theuavdigest.com. Or, of course, you can substitute feedback with the word Max or David if you want to get either one of us directly. On iTunes, if you stream us from iTunes, please leave us a review. It helps other people to find us. I think we've been short on reviews for a while, so I'd love if you're a real listener, take a few minutes. It doesn't take long to leave a review. Likewise, Stitcher.com, or especially if you're on Google Play. We'd like to get our name out in that world. If you'd like some swag, you can go to our Cafe Press store. And of course, the other way you can help the show is become a patron at patreon.com/theuavdigest. And of course, all of those donations help us to fund the costs and be able to do other outside events, etc. like that. So, and we appreciate all of our patrons. And with that, I'll say this is David in Philly.
In Max in Hartford.
Thanks for listening.